Welcome to the Work Camper Show, a podcast devoted to helping you discover how to finance your RV travel dreams. I'm Steve Anderson, the president of Work Camper News. Each one of our episodes will either introduce you to people who are already living the RV lifestyle or to opportunities to work short-term jobs. You'll also learn how to hit the road the right way and make the most of every opportunity. Now let's turn over today's show to your host, Greg Gerber.
Thank you, Steve. Today we're going to talk with a representative of the disaster relief organization that is looking for work campers to help victims get their lives back in order. This episode is sponsored by the National RV Training Academy in Athens, Texas. The Academy's one-week live training or home study course will teach you everything you need to know to fix about 80% of the problems people experience with their RVs. You can also sign up for additional training to become an RV inspector, campground technician, or to provide mobile RV service. For more information, visit www.nrvta.com. Jamie Allnut is the program director for the RV Disaster Corps, an organization that sends groups of RVers to various disaster areas, but only after the initial cleanup is completed. Those volunteers are not first responders, rather they are early responders, who often arrive on the scene about 6 to 8 weeks after the initial impact, be it a hurricane, flood, tornado, fire, or other natural or man-made disaster. The group is comprised of more than 900 RV owners from just about every state and Canada. These folks are unique in that they are helping coordinate and orchestrate the volunteer effort on behalf of a broader outreach. These volunteer work campers staff reception centers and long-term recovery centers by organizing where other volunteers will serve. She cites as an example directing where a group of 20 law students on spring break would be able to serve people in need. Jamie describes how RV Disaster Corps works, how it is funded, and what the members typically do in an emergency situation. She explains the commitment required on behalf of volunteers working for her group and some of the active needs for which volunteers are needed. To tell us more about RV Disaster Corps, please welcome Program Director Jamie Allnut to the show. Thanks, Jamie. I appreciate your time. Tell me, what is RV Disaster Corps? When did it start and what does it do?
Well, first, thank you, Greg, for having me on today. RV Disaster Corps today is a membership of over 900 RV owners that represent 48 states and Canada that volunteer to assist communities recovering from the effects of disasters. It was founded in 2016, funded for the first time with a pilot program in Texas in 2017. And we actively recruit, train, and deploy RV owners to respond and help communities recovering from, as we said, the effects of disasters.
That sounds like a great program. So rather than just getting in an RV and driving down to a disaster scene to see if there's a way to help, you guys are working behind the scenes to coordinate that help effort so that there is something for people to do who want to help out in a disaster.
That's true, Greg. And what the value of that behind the scenes coordination is that we can capitalize or leverage the resource of the individual. Because if you go down what we call spontaneous, if you spontaneously volunteer out of our hearts, and we do that, certainly we're called to do that as human beings, and we want to. I don't want to discourage the desire to volunteer, but going anywhere in where there's been an egregious effect, a disaster, you want to make sure that, one, it's safe, the safety of the survivors is very important, and to utilize what skills and abilities that you have to the best of your and your time. So the value of volunteering is so much measured by the best placement and match for your talents, skills, and abilities. So we certainly discourage anyone from self-deploying.
That makes sense.
We have built we've built relationships with sites, volunteer reception centers, long-term recovery centers, a multitude of sites in the communities, and we've determined their needs, their hours of operation, what they're looking for, and we basically manage the staffing of it, so to speak, the staffing of the volunteers.
And what kinds of things are these volunteers doing?
Well, initially following a disaster, we don't respond. We are not first responders. We leave that to the professionally trained, focused individuals that do that for a living. And we, at best, we're early responders. We come in a little later, usually 6-8+ weeks out. And when we do, that is to backfill or support staff, volunteer reception centers, long-term recovery centers, these sites that are set up in communities to filter through to, one, the volunteers that come in, the other volunteers that come in, and two, to filter the survivors and help direct them to case management. So those centers are pop up. We don't do that. They're popped up typically by AmeriCorps in the early days following a disaster, a flooding, any hurricane, whatever it may be. They're staffed, managed for at least 6 weeks or so. Then those young AmeriCorps folks want to move on. They have other things they can do out in the field. Heavy debris removal, heavy mucking and gutting, join other organizations and collaborate out there and do that kind of work. That's when they call on us. That's when they would prefer to have our type of folks come in and handle the coordination of the volunteer reception center. And we don't lead. There's always a lead on site. That is a local representative of the city or the county, an emergency management staffer, or a Chamber of Commerce representative, city council individual. Those folks are chosen locally to lead that volunteer and recovery center. We come in and provide support. On our website, we have the training for just that job, volunteer reception center coordination and support staff. That's what we do in the early days. By this point, in reference to Hurricane Harvey, which affected South Texas the end of August of 17. Now, this far out from that particular disaster, we don't have many volunteer reception centers still standing. So by this time, the volunteer opportunities have evolved. There's still a lot of work to be done, but it's not so much operating the centers. It's kind of in a phase two stage.
So when you say you're staffing the volunteer reception centers, these are places where the local volunteers or even the people who are coming in from out of areas sort of check in and get like an assignment of where they're supposed to go work. So the RV Disaster Corps volunteers aren't actually performing the work itself. They're more involved in the coordinating of the volunteers to handle that relief effort.
To answer that question, Greg, I want to say both. We come in initially to staff those volunteers because we have the online training component. If you've completed the Volunteer Reception Center training, 4 modules plus a mental health module on our website, then that qualifies you to go in and manage those, to support the management of those Volunteer Reception Center sites. Because tons of spontaneous volunteers will still come in, will still self-deploy. 4 large coordinated groups will come in and need help. And the volunteer reception centers walk them through the processes and help match them with the job that needs to be done out in the field with their capabilities. Let's say we have a group of 20 law students take a break, take their spring break and come down into a community that is still very much in the deep recovery mode where debris is still on the ground. These young folks come in and they brought tools and they're vetted. They have safety qualifications. They go through the process. The center will know where they need that work needs to be done. That information comes in. They'll answer phones. They'll handle that database management. They'll deal with the need has been is called into the center, and then there's someone that comes in that can match that need, that can fulfill that need. So we coordinate that. That's one. Two, if you do not want to go through the Volunteer Reception Center training, it's pretty basic. It can take up to 2 hours, but it's pretty basic. If that's just not your cup of tea and you'd like to be out there in the field and do more active work, then we can also accommodate you.
Okay.
So it's both sides.
So if you just want to help coordinate volunteers, you can help. But if you also want to pick up a chainsaw and start taking down debris in somebody's backyard, you can help there as well.
You can. You can take either approach. And we just ask that you do not self-deploy. And that's what we offer. We offer the coordination between the need and the resources.
Okay, very good. And your members are all RVers, correct?
That's right. That's right. Our niche is that we recruit the RV owner, typically over 55 years of age. Not required, but that is our niche, that we engage the senior population in impactful, meaningful volunteerism. So currently our enrollment is just over 900. And as I mentioned at the top of the interview, they represent 48 states and Canada. They've actually contributed over $470,000 in volunteer value to nonprofit organizations that focus in disaster recovery. That's nearly $500,000 in volunteerism. Volunteer value is determined by the independent sector. You can actually Google independentsector.org. The 2019 value of volunteer hour is set at $25.43. That's up 3% from 2018. Now, that dollar value is the value of volunteer time, and it is a part of 8 billion hours of time, talent, and effort that are put towards improving and strengthening communities. You may ask, well, what's the purpose of that? What do you do with that $25.43? No one gets paid that. That's not a payout. That's a value. In most grants, including FEMA grants, most funding sources require a community or the entity itself, whether it be the library, museum, a nature preserve, they are typically required to come forward with a portion of the grant request in the form of a match. $25.43 is the value of 1 hour of volunteerism. So by properly logging, tracking the volunteer hours, RV Disaster Corps was able to report nearly $500,000 in value back to the nonprofits that we were serving.
That's very cool. That's a lot. That's a big resource to be able to provide to a disaster area.
Yes, it is. That's part of our backside of our duty that we don't, it's not directly out front when it comes to with the volunteer and the site, but that's what we do on the backside administratively.
Do these RVs have to be self-contained in that they have their own electricity and their own water supplies, or are they able to hook up to those kind of utilities?
As I mentioned, we're not first responders, and we rarely are we really even early responders. We come in when the chaos has died down quite a bit, and most of the infrastructures have been secured. In other words, there should be our active RV parks that will have most all the hookups. We certainly research that and investigate that before we make connections. So if you are looking to come into a community affected by a disaster, I'm going to give the opportunity of deployment to you, but I'm going to know which RV parks are operational, which ones have full hookups or just dry docking requirements, state parks. We all know that a lot of state parks do not have the full hookups. Sometimes they'll be flooded, not available at all. That's part of the opportunity that we give our folks is that you tell me what you can do. If you want to dry dock for 2 weeks, you want to dry dock for 2 days. If you don't want to dry dock at all, if you've got a 50-amp a Class A, but you can run on a 30 for a week, then let's do it. We find a match. So I certainly don't emphasize the need to be able to dry dock and come in early because, again, as I said, by design, we come in later when we typically can find a fully operational site to park within 25 to 40 miles of the work site.
Okay, very good. That makes it easy to figure out. Do you have any active needs right now where you're looking for people to volunteer to help in these cleanup efforts?
I do. Believe it or not, we are still working in the coastal Bend area of Texas. You know, Hurricane Harvey affected 40 counties. And full recovery is a very long, slow process, 5 to 10 years. We are at the three-year mark in August. We'll be at the three-year mark. We are still working in Port Aransas, in the Rockport area, many different sites. For example, we're currently working with environmental stewardship. We have trail building, maintenance, planting of trees, removing of invasive plant species. We're cleaning up the natural habitat for marine life there in the Port Aransas area. The hurricane and major flooding moves the plant life. It affects it, and it just makes it more vulnerable for invasive species. It also affects the animal habitats along the coast, up in the dunes and up in the areas of the bay there. So a lot of that kind of work is being done. I have some folks right now that are actually building a partitions that go in the turtle tank, where turtles and other marine life that are injured are brought in and rehabilitated, provided medical care, and if they can, they're released. If not, they keep them on site until they're donated to a museum or some school, not museum, zoos, or aquatic center. So that's an interesting thing that's going on. That seems, maybe, how is that related to a disaster? Well, it is, because the flooding and the effects of the hurricanes can be devastating on plant life as well as the animals. We have work going on with still a small amount of debris removal. We certainly have some infrastructure where we have people that are painting park signs, that are restoring and refurbishing picnic areas and campsites in the public parks. We have wheelchair ramps, boardwalks, and footbridges that are being restored and rebuilt. We do have some home repair where you can join other organizations that need handyman support from light construction, painting, helping measure, helping clean up sheetrock. You don't have to be skilled. You have to be willing to learn and follow along, and you'll have such a darn good time doing it. That's the joy of this all. It's just volunteers are so thrilled to be serving. And the RVing population, I have to say, hands down, is the most loving, giving, and just overall joyful, a joyful, great group to work with.
I would agree with that, and it's good to note that you don't have to have specific experience in doing anything, that you can provide that kind of training. What does the training involve?
The training online that you referred to, or the training
Sure, online or on-site, both of them.
Well, the online training, as I mentioned earlier, is the Volunteer Reception Center training and the mental health component. The other training is done on site by the site that we're servicing. For example, the animal rehabilitation keep. When we've made a match that you'd like to work with marine life and your hours of availability match the need of the organization, then we make the connection invite you to deploy, and let's say you've set that up and you want to do that. That Marine Life Center has their own on-site training that they will implement, that they will share with you. That just the particulars with their organization, you know, safety and how to feed the animals that are there. It's particular to the site.
Okay. Or are you looking for a specific commitment from the volunteers?
What makes RVDC so unique is that we allow our volunteers and members to choose their location, where they would like to go, what type of service, whether it be doing some light construction, or they want to join a quilt group and that helps make comfort items for those that are still distressed and dealing with PTSD. That's a wide range of activity. Let's say they would like to work with the nature preserves, or they want to strictly work with home rebuilds. They choose their type of service, their length of stay, and their location. Now, granted, the longer is always better. Once you get settled into a location, and let's say you chose the nature preserve, and they've gone through the initial training of how to recognize invasive species and the proper process of removing it and how they handle that debris once they removed it, they've invested in you, and it's great if you can give several days as opposed to 1 hour one day. It's really beneficial for everyone if you can give a couple of days minimum, and sometimes it's a couple of weeks. We're flexible, and that's part of the beauty of the RV Disaster Corps. We're really unlike any other RV volunteer program, specifically because of that. We have flexible deployments with a unique variety of service opportunities, and we personally try to match those opportunities with the RVer's talent, skills, abilities, and desires, length of stay.
Okay, so you do an act that when people are filling out this application, they're indicating all of that as part of the application, or is it part of an interviewing process that you engage in?
It's an interviewing process. We have an enrollment form. It's a basic enrollment form that just gets the information we need to establish an initial relationship. And then either by phone or email, whatever they prefer, we'll take it from there and we'll discuss what you'd like to do. I have a retired hospital pharmacist. Delightful, delightful. Winter Texan from Minnesota. And let's just say his name is Tom. Tom had minimal experience working with power tools, minimal carpentry experience. He had so much fun stretching and moving outside of his normal comfort zone and said, hey, if they'll let me, I just want to tag along with these folks that know what they're doing. I'll clean up. I'll be their helper. Just, I want to watch. I want to learn what they're doing. Just by being there and providing the kind of support he can. He evolved into being able to completely set windows. Last time I visited with him, he was in a home that's built up on stilts, and he was framing in a window and was just so elated at this new skill that he'd learned. And felt fulfilled that he was able to not only learn this, but serving a survivor of a disaster. And he turned it completely around and was thanking the homeowner for letting him learn these skills while helping on the homeowner's property.
Wow, that's really neat. So you said that people can select their length of stay, so if they can only manage a week or two, you'll still take them as a volunteer?
Absolutely. We do not have any set specific length of time. And that's part of our flexibility that makes us so unique. I think that's why we have over 900 RVers, and that we attracted those 900 within the first 18 months of going live on our website. Quick to respond, and we've done some zigzagging across the U.S. with our our workshops and telling folks about our story. You know, RVers, we know no boundaries with our travel. Of course, state lines don't mean a thing to us. Well, it turns out that the RVDC RVers have no boundaries with their volunteering. It's, they'll volunteer anywhere there's a need, and they truly seem to enjoy the different type of tasks, from manning a volunteer reception center to painting park benches. It's so meaningful.
That's neat. And how are you folks funded?
We are currently funded as a pilot program with the Corporation for National and Community Service. It's a federal agency that engages the senior, through Senior Corps, they engage the senior population to volunteer and serve. That's our current funder. And we are working with the Dale Foundation, specifically in the Texas region, as I mentioned, Hurricane Harvey relief.
Are you looking for sponsors from the RV industry?
Yes. As a matter of fact, Greg, we are absolutely embarking on a campaign to reach the RV industry and offer a collaboration with RV Disaster Corps, which in turn is a collaboration at the federal level with Corporation for National and Community Service. Sponsoring RV Disaster Corps is a natural fit to the Go RV branding effort by the RVIA, RV Industry Association. Volunteering is a part of today's RVing lifestyle. And our RVers are out there in every brand, manufacturer, and rig type representing that industry. It's a wonderful opportunity for the industry, the RV industry, to be aligned with a nationally deployable resource such as RV Disaster Corps.
Very good. So if people wanted more information about your organization and how to get involved, where can they find it?
Well, we are at rvdisastercorps.org, and that's C-O-R-P-S, Corps. The P and the S are not pronounced. rvdisastercorps.org. They can simply email me, J, and my last name, A-L-L-N-U-T-T, at RV Disaster Corps.
That's very good. Well, I really appreciate all this information. I know that there are a lot of people who love to volunteer, who just get into RVing and want to help out, and this is another opportunity for them to engage in local communities that have been hard hit. So I'd encourage people to check out your organization and get involved.
Well, thank you, Greg. I think it's time to join us. Let's impact change, influence others, and make the world a better place. Let's just go RVing with a purpose.
Good idea. Thank you again. When a disaster strikes, the natural response many people have is to do something. Many times they will just load up a car, truck, or RV with supplies and head to the area. Unfortunately, that type of self-deployment often contributes to more chaos and confusion. The first wave of personnel is the initial responders who are involved in rescuing and evacuating victims, clearing roads, fighting fires, controlling floods, setting up temporary shelters, and creating systems to deliver much-needed food, water, and other essential services. Weeks later, after the news has died down, there are still a lot of pressing needs and volunteers are still needed. In fact, even more help may be needed as the community begins the long process of rebuilding. That's where RV Disaster Corps comes in handy. Jamie Allnut and her volunteers staff reception centers where other volunteers check in to get their temporary assignments. Her volunteers are also capable of picking up tools and aiding in the rebuilding effort as well. Because everyone lives in an RV, the volunteers aren't taxing scarce housing resources. They're bringing their own home with them. Jamie's volunteers work with state, federal, and local emergency management agencies to identify places for others to help and tasks for them to do. It's an absolutely essential service following any disaster. For more information on ways you can lend a hand, visit www.rvdisastercorps.org. You can also view videos describing the work that volunteers do and learn how you can get involved safely and efficiently. Volunteer work is just one of the types of jobs available to work campers. Work Camper News, a magazine and online publication, connects RVers to full and part-time jobs around the country. Whether it is running a business from your RV or working short-term jobs for a variety of employers, Work Camper News can give you information to help you plan a course to live your own dream and get you on the road faster than you thought possible. For more information about opportunities to live, work, and play in your RV, visit www.workcampernews.com. This episode is sponsored by the National RV Training Academy in Athens, Texas. The Academy's one-week live training or home study course will teach you everything you need to know to fix about 80% of the problems people experience with their RVs. You can also sign up for additional training to become an RV inspector, campground technician, or to provide mobile RV service. For more information, visit www.nrvta.com. That's all we have for today's show. Next time, we'll be talking with someone from a community college in Texas who hires RVers to help maintain the facilities. We'll see you next time on The Work Camper Show. Thanks for listening.